Good afternoon, everybody. Shmuel Plotzker coming at you live from somewhere in West Virginia, outside of Burger King. Stopped off. We thought we'd get to Sheetz. We didn't do that, but we hopefully will. Anyway, it's 1 o'clock. Welcome aboard. Book club class, Kaufman Synagogue, School of Jewish Studies, Monday, February 5 of the year 24. We're reading the book, The Final Exam, Letters to Our Students by Rabbi Dr. Ari Berman. We're on letter number 16, page 99. Almost done with the book. The life to which you were born and the life you choose. My dear student, Torat Emet, which means the Torah of truth, Torat Adam, the life of mankind, Torah of mankind, Torat Chaim, a law or a Torah of life, Torat Chesed, a Torah teaching of kindness, and Torat Zion, the Torah of the return to Zion. Seek truth. Discover your sacred potential. Live your values. Act with compassion and bring redemption. These are our core Torah values. They fill out and enhance the foundation of Torah Umada. These values differentiate us. Taken as a whole, they constitute a layered notion of personal identity and purpose. Let me illustrate with my own personal story. Sila Fenster, known as Bubby, my wife's grandmother, is one of my heroines. She was born in Poland and had a large family, including her brother Pinchas, to whom she was very close. Her childhood sweetheart, Shlomo, eventually became her husband, and together they lived a relatively quiet and peaceful life. But then the Nazis invaded Poland, entered their town, and gathered and killed all of its Jews, except for the few who escaped. Bubby managed to escape into the woods with Shlomo and a few of their nephews and nieces. But no one else in their large family was as fortunate. Her sweet brother Pinchas became a sad memory. Bubby never left her husband's side. And together, they managed to evade the Germans. They eventually found their way to Romania. Following the war, they left Europe and went to Cuba. When Castro rose to power, they fled once again, this time to New York. The story of the Jews is a story of movement, adaptation, and change. These two are ingredients of redemption, a fierce resilience and commitment to life and Jewish continuity, no matter the circumstances. Several decades later, Bobby received a call from a friend of hers who had just returned from a trip to the Soviet Union. Sila, she said, you need to sit down. I have something astounding to tell you. Your brother Pinchas, he's alive. While you ran west, he escaped east. You each thought the other was dead, but Pinchas is alive and living in Russia. Can you imagine hearing such news, thinking your sibling did not survive, and then hearing so many years later that he did? Bubby immediately contacted Pinchas, but they were never able to meet in person. Sadly, not long after, Pinchas died, and they never had a family reunion. But Pinchas had a daughter named Gala, who married Vladimir. When they had a son, they named him Pinchas, after her father. After the Iron Curtain fell, Gala and her family moved to Israel. Not long after, Anita and I were in Israel, where I was learning at YU's Griscola. At the end of the year, Anita gave birth to our first son, whom we named Shlomo, after her grandfather, who had recently passed away. Bubby came to Israel for the bris. I vividly remember how she was sitting with her new great-grandson, Shlomo, on her lap, when in walked a woman who had a clear family resemblance. It was her niece, Gala, whom she had never previously met. Gala came holding the hand of a little boy named Pinchas. When Pinchas ran over to see the baby, once again, Bubby was surrounded by a Pinchas and a Shlomo. At this event, when we welcomed our first son into God's covenant, we saw with our own eyes the way God's miracles persist in our day. The Nazis thought they could kill us, remove every last one of us from the earth. but they could not. We survived. We will always survive. This is a divine covenantal promise. And even more, we return to our homeland. Pinchas and Shlomo were alive again. And this time, they connected with each other in Jerusalem, the capital of the modern Jewish state of Israel. Bubby's life represents the dramatic story of the Jewish people in the modern era, a story of an indomitable spirit able to transcend destruction and to rebuild a lost world. And the story continues. At my investiture as president of this university, Bubby attended and watched with pride. She was over 100 years old at the time, surrounded by generations of her family, and sitting next to my daughter Tamar, who inherited her great-grandmother's inner strength and personal kindness. In my investiture remarks, I shared Bubby's story, because it is now part of my story as well. Acknowledging her presence that day brought the standing ovation that her incredible Jewish journey deserved. But this story is not over. One of the most significant moments of my life was when Anita and I brought our oldest son, Shlomo, to the Army base to officially enlist in the IDF, the Israel Defense Forces. It was very emotional for me as a father. As I stood there with him, I watched young men and women signing up for their different Army units, singing and dancing in a circle. This was not a sad day for them. It was a day of celebration. It was apparent that they saw their service to the country as a privilege. When Shlomo came back for his first Shabbos at home in uniform, I was deeply proud of him and proud that we brought into the world someone who would be part of the great Jewish story in the state of Israel. He represented a new chapter for our family. Shlomo served in an intelligence unit. Our second son, Yehuda, was in a combat unit. Anyone in the Army sacrifices years and faces challenges that can be potentially corrosive to one's faith and observance. But in combat, the sacrifice is even greater. When you enter a combat unit, you have to prepare yourself physically and mentally for every eventuality. You prepare for the worst and hope for the best. For me, this recognition was profound, frightening, and inspiring. My wife and I raised our children to embrace service, and then when the moment came, I suddenly experienced a very real physical fear of what this could mean. We were joining with tens of thousands of other Israeli families who had come face to face with the reality of Army service for generations. Many of them have stood before coffins draped in blue and white flags. They weep every year on Mount Herzl. I remember so clearly the Shabbat before Yehuda went into the Army. We were sitting in shul, and it came time for Birkat Kohanim, the priestly blessing. I put my tallit over my head and my son's head to protect him spiritually, and I was crying. I said to him, "All my life, Yehuda, all I've ever wanted is to put my talis over your head and protect you. And now you're going out and you're going to protect me." It was a meaningful and defining moment for me as a father and as a Jew. But you don't have to move to Israel or join the Army to see your life as one of service. Sadly, communal or public service is not normative, especially not for college students in American universities. Inducting our sons into the Israeli Army made me reflect when I came back to the United States on one of the problems of a society focused almost exclusively on the self. What happens to people who sacrifice nothing to achieve everything? This is where all of our core values do their hardest work. Torah Emet teaches us to be honest with ourselves about public and religious service. Torah Adam helps us find ourselves by finding ourselves to something greater than ourselves. Torah Chaim helps us integrate what we learn with the best way to love. Torah Chesed reminds us to have others at the top of our minds and hearts. Torah Tzion brings all these values together to move history forward. So where and when did your story start? And where will it end? How will it continue? We sometimes think our stories begin at birth and end at death, but in the Jewish tradition, it's far more expansive. My personal story includes my origins. I am my parents' son and my grandparents' grandson. And once I met and married Anita, my heart expanded and we forged a new unit. And my backstory expanded as well to include the stories of her parents and grandparents. And after we're gone, our children, and with God's help, our future grandchildren, will continue all of our stories. Shlomo was a child in Poland. Shlomo was a husband and a survivor. Shlomo was also raised in America and immigrated to Israel and served in the IDF. It's all part of the same story. This is the lesson of the five core Torah values. The story of the Jewish people, all of our stories, begins at Sinai. It begins with the Torah, begins with truth. Our stories do not end after our 120 years, but at Zion, when we reach redemption. What we do in our years on this earth is develop ourselves as Torah Adam. We live lives of mitzvot, filled with chesed, working to spread our values and redeem the world. Jews are directed by our tradition to develop both their personal way of serving God as well as to locate their individual stories within the context of the broader narrative of the Jewish people. Rabbi Soloveitchik famously distinguished between two covenants. The covenant of fate relates to the historical events that will befall the Jewish people, while the covenant of destiny refers to the choice of living an elevated life of Torah and mitzvot. Our tradition directs us to develop ourselves in both ways, combining history with heritage, fate with destiny. The way in which each of you blend these values will naturally shift depending on your proclivities and the different time periods of your life. Collectively, though, they root us deeply within a structured value system and provide moral guidance and direction for living our lives. They propel us to develop our talents and skills while directing us to reach outward and connect to others in kindness. And they inspire us with a grand, historic purpose to make a difference and impact the world. This is what we believe Judaism represents and what God wants from all of us. Life is for service. No matter what you do in the future, think of how your personal choices serve others. Perhaps you will consider Jewish education or the rabbinate as your service. In our Yeshiva University family, this is one of the highest levels of service. It offers, as I have found, a future of meaning and impact. It is sacred and important. But remember, no matter who you are and what your gifts lead you to do, your purpose is to be of service to your family, to your community, to your people, and to the world. This joins you to the covenant of destiny. Bivracha, Ari Berman. And now, one more letter for today. Letter number 17. What's in a name? Remember, he's writing to Yeshiva University students. Dr. Ari Berman is the president of YU. My dear students, now that we have a more descriptive sense of our five core Torah values, it is very clear that we have a language problem, and I need your help to solve it. We use a lot of labels within Judaism, and they are important because they help us understand who we are. But religious taxonomies also limit us and often fail to fully capture our reality and the nuanced nature of our commitments. Take, for example, the words we currently use to describe segments of the Ashkenazic Jewish population. The terms reform, conservative, and orthodox were phrases coined for denominations developed largely in the 19th and 20th centuries. Call it the impact of postmodernism. Call it the passage of time. But these labels are increasingly losing their original meanings and force. While there are still synagogues, rabbinical seminaries, and youth organizations associated with these movements, these do not appear to be compelling ways of thinking about Judaism in North America today. Looking ahead, demographic polls indicate that these terms will likely write themselves out of history. The story these polls are telling is that the two categories of growth in the diaspora in the next 30 to 40 years will be the Orthodox and the unaffiliated. The latter term is often used in research, as well as the word nuns. Nuns, N-O-N-E-S, referring to Jews and others whom Judaism plays little or no role in their construction of identity. In other words, they put down the word none when asked, what's your religion? How do you affiliate? None. Back in. Through non-membership, high intermarriage rates, and weak or no Jewish education, many Jews, without a real injection of Jewish meaning, will cease to find in Judaism a marker of who they are. The words affiliated and unaffiliated are largely measures of belonging, relevant to nonprofit organizations and houses of worship, but, quote, doing Jewish, end quote, today, for many Jews, does not involve any of these labels or rubrics. You can find personal Jewish meaning in rituals, study, and community while not being a member of any formal structure. The terms are less relevant and less descriptive of who we are now. The dividing lines are blurred for some and not at all relevant for others. The number of Jews who identify as Orthodox is on the rise in contemporary sociological studies that once upon a time predicted its demise. It seems that Judaism in the diaspora will become either a very superficial ethnic identity or one that indicates a deep and lifelong commitment. Although we should approach demographic studies with some skepticism, we have, after all, outlived predictions of Jewish demise for centuries. We can see the patterns playing out already. The question of the future, and some may argue the present, will not be what denomination you belong to, but whether or not you are serious about Judaism in whichever way you practice it. Within Orthodoxy, we also use language that can be misleading. While you're here and throughout your life, you will hear certain terms, certain words describing Orthodoxy today. Open Orthodoxy, modern Orthodoxy, centrist Orthodoxy, YU Machmir, ultra-Orthodoxy, neo-Hasidic, Haredi, and right-wing Judaism. There are probably more labels that I don't know. You may find that one of these labels suits you, or you might feel unsure where you belong. Maybe none of these words really describes you, or maybe you don't want to be pigeonholed into any category. One glaring challenge is in our choice of language to describe our religious commitments. Phrases like modern Orthodox are wanting, meaning they're lacking. Ask a group of people to describe the ideology of modern Orthodoxy, and you'll likely get a host of different answers, even on this campus. And the label carries questionable and false implications. Modern implies that our view of Judaism, which balances a full set of Torah values while embracing and contributing to society, is new. It's actually very old, dating all the way back to Sinai. In addition, modern and ultra-Orthodox are generally seen as measures relative to each other rather than understood on their own terms, as if Orthodoxy were placed on a linear spectrum in which there is a less or more paradigm. Ultra-Orthodoxy in this range is more. Modern Orthodoxy is less. In such a model, students who are passionate about their Judaism might mistakenly assume that their modern Orthodox community is less than that of the ultra-Orthodox, who are the real deal, uncompromising and true. While labels may be helpful for outsiders, their superficiality creates deep problems and dramatic distortions for insiders. A more accurate description of our thinking is cited in the name of Rabbi Chaim Soloveitchik. When the two Jewish values of saving a life and keeping Shabbos were in conflict, he was not makel or lenient about the laws of Shabbos, he famously said, but he was machmir, he was stringent about the laws of saving lives. What he was highlighting is that there are a multitude of Torah values, and the correct Torah orientation is one that upholds and honors all of these values. It is a maximalist view of a Torah commitment. Specific circumstances will require you to choose how to navigate competing values at a moment in time. But even in such cases, the other values do not disappear, nor are they necessarily less important. When saving a life competes with the laws of Shabbos, one will need to choose what to do. But both life and Shabbos remain holy and precious. Highlighting this point is that, given a slight shift of circumstances, such as a changed level of risk, one might reassess and arrive at a different conclusion. It is precisely our range of values and our commitment to that range that allows us to respond to an ever-changing world with the confidence that halakha can address whatever dilemmas we may confront with sensitivity. Within this perspective, Torah Judaism advocates many different values. Our most central and pressing life issues are rarely a case of simply doing more than or doing less than, being more than or being less than. When we do what we perceive as more, it often comes at the sacrifice of another equally compelling value. If, for example, your religious quest leads you to a place of greater isolation and separation, with greater borders and boundaries between you and the rest of the society, you sacrifice your ability to shape, influence, and lead in that society. If you place yourself in a fortress to shield yourself from negative influences, you will also be less capable of bringing Torah to the rest of the Jewish people and to the world. But by the same token, if you're out in the world without a sophisticated filtration system, and if you don't think about protecting and shielding yourself from negative influences, you are putting yourself at significant risk to lose the strength of your commitment. Here, too, you will not be able to lead and influence. Rabbi Sajigon, in his introduction to Emunos Vadeos, compares exposing one's faith to pernicious influences to going out in extremes of temperature without adequate protection. We would not do that to our bodies, nor should we do it to our souls. At Yeshiva University, we provide you with the skills, tools, and role models to deepen the threshold of intensity when it comes to your learning and Torah observance, while at the same time empowering you to go out into the world as beacons of light who will make important contributions as citizens. Life questions such as what community you should live in or what literature you read are not more or less issues. They involve balancing priorities and calibrating them with the consciousness that the Torah demands us to uphold a multiplicity of values. One of our educational goals at YU is to help students prioritize their values and live by them. Unfortunately, many people still talk about Yeshiva University as if we were in the 60s and 70s, using language and ideas that do not resonate with an emerging generation of students. Even more problematic is that these labels at times create unnecessary divisions. The labels of modern and centrist orthodoxy are terminologies and outmoded frameworks that diminish the kind of thinking we need for the 21st century. I'm not sure what language we should be using to describe the kind of Judaism we promote at Yeshiva University. In Israel, the term Dati Lumi literally means national religious and has political overtones. As we are religious Zionists, maybe a more apt phrase is Torani Tzioni, as it communicates our commitment to Torah, Israel, and redemption. I'm also partial to Torah Judaism, as our educational philosophy comprises the full complement of Torah values. I am struggling to find the right words to describe a Judaism, not a denomination that is rich in mitzvos, study, ethics, tefillah, piety, and chesed, while engaging with the larger world in the quest to bring redemption. Our objective is to sanctify God's name in the world, in the spirit of Isaiah's prophecy, which is impossible to do if we don't engage with the world. We need to wrap our language around our values, but instead, we use limited descriptions of ourselves that invite weak and often meaningless comparisons with the practice and beliefs of other Jews. One thing is clear. We need a new lexicon for today's new dilemmas that stays true to ancient wisdom. As the emerging generation of committed Jews, this will largely be your work to find the words and the language to describe the Judaism of the future, one that is deeply engaging and inspiring, demanding and loving. I encourage you to engage in that conversation and help me help us discover the language of the present and future. With blessing, Ari Berman. And my dear friends, we'll leave it at that. It's a half hour class, but we got to get back on the road. And guess what? We only have two more letters to go, which means that with God's help, next week, we finish the book. It has been an absolute delight. We're not there just yet. Another couple of pages. I'm able to hit some of the footnotes in the back, if they're worthy, if they stand alone, if some of them do. We'll read them out loud. Otherwise, we, God willing, will plan to finish this book next week. And we plan to finish Melachim Beis next week as well. We have a class tomorrow night at 7:30. God willing, we'll be giving it live in Gulfmanis Synagogue. Please, God, get us home safe and sound, so we can give the class live tomorrow night at Tuesday at 7:30. And then, with God's help, we'll finish both our book club class and our Tanakh class next week. And we should celebrate. We should make a little kiddush. We'll talk about it. Thank you so much, everybody and anybody who called in tonight. I saw there's one person. I think I have an idea who that is. Thank you for calling in. And everybody's going to listen to this on the rebound after publication on sheerenjoyment.com. Hope you enjoy it. Shul Palatka signing off now for Gulfmanis Synagogue and our School of Jewish Studies, which goes around the United States. Of course, you know, digitally it goes around the world. But physically, I've given this class all over Ohio, West Virginia, New York, New Jersey, Maryland. It's always a pleasure. Wishing everybody a good day and a safe day. With God's help, we'll get home safe and sound. See everybody tomorrow in Cincinnati, Ohio. Take care and be well. Bye-bye now.